Right, I'll call to order the meeting of the Retirement Committee on Tuesday, July 28th, here in Conference Room C2 at noon. Can I have a roll call, please?
Sure, roll call. Director Wigand.
Here.
Director Amezcua. Director Yeo. Director Nguyen. Director Green. Director Jung.
Jung is here.
Director Tran.
Present.
Director Sheldon. Director Meeks.
Here.
Dodo. Jason Batticus.
Present.
Kevin O'Toole.
Here.
You have a quorum of the committee.
Okay, great. Items too late for agendas?
There are none.
Okay. And visitor participation? Don't see any hands or anyone interested. So move on to consent calendar item number one, which are the minutes from the last meeting. Anyone want to make a recommendation?
Trad move for approval.
All right. We got a motion and a second.
Okay. Roll call. Director Wigand.
Yes.
Director Jung.
Jung's an aye.
Director Tran.
Yes.
Jason Dadakis.
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole.
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Okay, great. All right. Item number two under matters for consideration is our 401A and 457 investment lineup.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to recommend we take these items out of order if you're open to it.
Yeah.
To first discuss item number three.
Sure.
And then, depending on the outcome of that item, come back to item number two.
Perfect. Okay. We'll move to item number three, which is the retirement plan fiduciary and advisory service.
So Mr. Scott Sutherland and the Sutherland Group have changed their association from Wells Fargo, and we need to, as a group, consider whether we want to sign a new contract with Mr. Sutherland and Seapoint Wealth Management. So Mr. Sutherland was going to make a few comments about why they've made the transition and what's driving the change for them, and then I'm going to ask him to leave the room so we can have that discussion about that.
Great.
Thanks, everybody. So I spent 19 years at my prior firm, been in business for 34 years and kind of intended to retire from that particular firm. But starting about 18 months ago, that firm decided that they did not want to do business with municipal and government enterprise like yours, and specifically hampered our ability to do services for retirement plans in general. So there was a period of time between May of last year and the end of last year where we had a lot of debate with management about the services that we provide and continuing those. And I was told at many places that there would be exceptions made for our team because I've been working with government plans for 25 years. Those did not end up materializing. So in January of this year, I started looking at other firms that were more focused on retirement plans and friendly towards retirement plans. So we did actually meet with six different firms. When you do what I do, those firms are very interested in hiring you and having you come over and bring your clients. We did have offers from three different firms, and then we picked LPL Financial. We officially started with LPL on July 1st of this year. So if you don't know the name LPL, it's in the S&P 500. It's a Fortune 500 company. It's the largest brokerage firm in the United States. It's not associated with a bank, and that's very much on purpose. So LPL has about 32,000 advisors compared to my prior firm that had about 16,000 advisors, and they cover about $220 billion in retirement plans, over 10,000 plans with LPL. So that was why we thought it was the best place for us to be. LPL will also serve as a 338 or a 321 fiduciary on all the retirement plans that we manage. So that means you have a deep pocket. So we're a fiduciary in your plan as we've been for many years. But you also have the deep pocket that's a fiduciary in the plan as well. So a 321 fiduciary is one in which we're making recommendations as a fiduciary and then the committee's making decisions. A 338 fiduciary is one where you're turning over his decisions so that the consultant's actually making them for you. So I have that ability and did so at Wells Fargo as well to make those decisions. I've always done business as a 321 consultant, which is what we recommend doing here. I love collaboration rather than being in charge of all of that. So all of the services that we've provided to you since 2007 would continue. So meeting with employees, webinars, these committee meetings, everything would stay the same. There are no changes to employees when it comes to fidelity. Investments are the same, deferral rates, logons. There's nothing they would need to do to change. So What would be different is that you'd be paying a different firm. And the way it works with LPL is that Fidelity would pay our consulting fee directly to LPL. And then the questions are, what is Seapoint Wealth Management? Well, when you work for LPL, and the reason it's not as much of a brand name is that because most of them are independent shops that use LPL's platform. So the branding tends to be that group of brokers or single brokers that are working together. So I had a setup at my prior firm where I was a division called Profit Formula, where my revenues came in. I paid a certain percentage to the house. Then I paid my staff. I paid for technology. I paid for Zephyr. I paid for healthcare and all that kind of stuff. And what was left over is my income. That's the same setup I have at Seapoint, but Seapoint's an independent registered investment advisor. We call them RIAs, which has about 22 employees and eight different advisors that work for that. So essentially, you'd have a contract with LPL as your fiduciary. Fidelity would pay LPL, but the payments to me would go into Seapoint, and then I can control my staffing, what we spend money on, how we invest, how we run our business. So LPL is much more flexible. There was only a couple of investment programs I could use at my prior firm, but here there's four new ones that I've never had a chance to use. So you guys have been seeing Zephyr reports from me for a long, long time. We can continue that process, but we also have four new ones to try out. So that's part of my job in the next couple of months is to dig into those. So we may just use it to augment our process. We may use it to improve our process. But in essence, what you had before, you'll have again. The last thing I can mention to you is because of a different approach to the business that LPL has, we can also offer you a pricing concession. So we can bring our pricing down by 20%. You're currently paying 6 basis points to Wells Fargo. You would be paying 4.8 basis points to LPL. So same services, no reduction in services. There would be a reduction in fee. My prior firm takes a bigger piece of what comes in than LPL would. So in essence, we kind of pass that savings along to you.
Great.
So that's my statement.
All right.
Any questions before?
Scott, what does that 20% equate to in actual?
It's probably, let's see. So 1.2. So it's probably about $29,000 a year. So that's savings for participants since it is a participant paid plan.
Okay.
That's a good question.
So the recommended items here for us are to direct staff to terminate the Wells Fargo Advisors Institutional Consulting Services contract, direct staff to negotiate and execute a new 3-2-1 fiduciary contract and fee concessions with Southern Retirement Group, LPL, and the district, and then change the advisor of record with Fidelity Investments, Scott Sutherland at Wells Fargo Advisors, to Scott Sutherland at LPL. So, Scott, I've only known you for brief time, but as chair of this committee, you do a great job for us. I think the district employees are thankful for your service. Your hands-on approach, I think, guides them in the appropriate direction to look for their long-term journey and retirement, which, CalPERS or OSERS or these other organizations handle for them. But in this unique realm that we're in here in the district, you provide a great service that gives that hands-on approach that you can't get from any other type of investment that those outside groups provide. I think this is great. I'd love to hear if anyone has any contrary to that, but I think keeping you status quo, it helps us out. No changes to anything other than it looks like a little discount, slight discount, which is beneficial. But nothing else is changing, and we get the same Scott, just the different company that is his employer. So anyone have any questions or?
There aren't any questions for Scott. I can ask him to step out, but if you have questions for Scott.
One question. Scott, could you talk a little about the role of and maybe the attitude towards government plans and inviting advising government entities at LPL or Seapoint?
Yeah, very positive towards that. So that was one of the things that was sort of a mandatory thing. But substantial business in that area. When this was first occurring at my prior firm, I was led to believe that this is universal throughout the industry. But in talking to six different firms, I wasn't able to find that sentiment anywhere. To me personally, these are the easiest, cleanest, strongest clients I have. So I never understood and was never explained to why those were issues. from a prior employer, but LPL is very much dedicated to this business. They realize, as I do, that often it can be a referral business where you work with retirement plans and you end up working with people you get to know through those plans. So there's a lot of referrals that come out of that. So they feel it is a core business and they put a huge amount of resources behind it. So they have a much bigger team. They have a 40-person team in home office that supports me. They also have an ERISA attorney on staff who is the gentleman who wrote the EGFR rules of a few years ago that the U.S. government adopted. So I believe that everything you've seen before, you will continue to see, but there's more resources that all have to reach to offer you in the future. And I definitely believe that they feel like this is, I mean, sort of like an opportunity for them to jump on because they think it's great business, even though some people do not.
Yeah. I'm not sure how our contracting structure works with you. Are we on an annual basis? Is it every 5 years? Our contract terms? Does anybody, do you know?
It doesn't have an expiration date.
It isn't. It's just kind of open-ended. Yeah. And okay.
Yeah.
And your same team will be coming over with
you? We're having a change on our analyst position. So Anith Ambi, who I don't know if you ever met in person, but saw on the calls, she decided to become a Chase bank broker. So we've been interviewing for a new analyst. The exciting thing for me is we've had over 160 resumes come in. We've seen 22 people there that have more than 20 years experience and a dozen that have more than 30 years experience. So last time I interviewed, I had two resumes to look at. So what I've learned through my process is there's apparently not a lot of analyst jobs in Southern California anymore. They've been moved to New York or to Chicago. So it's kind of the pick of the litter. So we're hoping to make an offer in the next week or two to somebody, but we'll have somebody that's highly experienced on staff. And then I'm hoping to have somebody that is close to my equal in terms of their investment knowledge. They'll actually challenge and make us better because they'll have different opinions too. So we had great staffing in the past, but I'm excited about what we can do in the future.
And then how many days after this approval will we move to the LPL?
We're ready to jump as soon as the board approves the change. So, okay. Yeah. So the three steps, terminating the contract can happen within a day. The change of Fidelity can happen within a day. And then we can get you a draft contract for LPL here shortly after that. So.
This recommendation committee, and then we'll have our board meeting a week from tomorrow. Okay, any questions online? Seeing none, we need to depart with Scott, I guess.
Okay, for a moment.
Thank
Make
you.
Yourself good. Comfortable in my office, Scott.
Okay, please close out. Get out of here.
I don't think his stepping out will last long. I'd be happy to support these recommendations, but happy to hear if anyone has any concerns or objections to that.
I just have one comment, maybe a suggestion. I totally agree that Scott's been fantastic. He's just been an excellent advisor over all these years. And I think staff needs a quick transition. We shouldn't be going for a long period of time without access to a financial advisor. I'm thinking longer term, after we make, assuming the board approves and we make this transition, that we consider maybe sometime next year doing an RFP, just consideration for kind of due diligence. We've done it with other, contracts, like with Fidelity. Every 5 years, we would reconsider whether or not we want to just kind of see what's out there and make sure we're getting a good, value for what we're paying. And I'm just throwing it out there for consideration that we might do that also with our financial advisor, maybe every 5 years or so, at least consider putting out a RFP just to see if we're still getting the service we're looking for. So just an idea.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. And I think we can do that in through this committee. So maybe if we can just take note on that to look through the process of once we sign, go through all this to try to get something up within the next 6 months or something.
That's why, as we're coming up on 20 or so years working with the same group, I don't have any record of it being re-RFP during that time, not to say it hasn't happened, but it's been some time. Scott tells us from time to time about a lot of these lawsuits that come out of fiduciary duties and not properly managing the plan. The emerging area of lawsuits right now is keeping the same consultant for years and years and years and never RFPing your consultant. Mm. So probably prudent to do it regardless of this transition. But yeah, we can agendize that and bring it back to the committee next year for consideration.
Yeah, just within a reasonable time, we'll communicate that with Scott so he understands that we're not doing this as a slight, but as a benefit to our district.
Okay. I think that's great advice. I appreciate that.
All right. Anyone online wish to opine or I guess make a motion, seeing that there doesn't seem to be any objections in the room?
So moved.
Tran, second the motion.
Okay. Okay, I'll call for the vote.
Roll call, Director Wiegand.
Yes.
Director Jung.
Aye.
Director Tran.
Yes.
Jason Dadakis.
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole?
Yes.
The motion carries 5-0.
Okay. All right. We'll bring Scott in and take a deep breath and we'll get back into it. Tackle a pretty meaty agenda here.
Thank you.
Welcome back.
Yeah, if I came back over there with your backpack, you'd probably. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is
that a order? Yeah, no, that's perfect. All right, Scott, we got a meaty one. Fair amount of.
We do have a meaty one.
401As and 457. So we'll move that item two, or which is now three, but let's go through the red flag fund review.
26 has been a lot of work for this committee, so it continues today. So let's switch to our screens here.
It is, you can close that one.
Yeah, I'll just close. We see that on the side. So minutes from our April meeting, this particular agenda, the 457 plan had three red flags: healthcare with T. Rowe Price, Franklin Small Cap Value. It was red flagged in January's meeting, and then T. Rowe Price All Cap Opportunities, which is in both plans, with red flag from the from October of 2025. That date's wrong. 401A, natural resources, with red flag. We have taken that off of the red flag in the next meeting. Victory Sycamore Small Cap Opportunities. So you can see we had a busy January with red flags. Also, the similarly managed mid-cap value, Victory Sycamore Established Value, was red flagged in January of this year. T. Rowe in both plans, red flagged in large growth, Parnassus in large blend, and JP Morgan Equity Income, which had a new manager who started in 2024, red flagged in this January. So we started that meeting as we're doing today, reviewing the meeting minutes, market economic review. We'll cover a little bit of that again today. And then additions, we ended up making quite a few changes. So the 457 plan now has a new healthcare fund. We put in Janus Global Life Sciences. Large cap blend, we took out one MFS fund to add a new MFS Blended Research International. And we took out T. Rowe Price. Their portfolio manager, you might remember, went on sabbatical in June not to return to the fund. So we added Fidelity Blue Chip Growth as your new fund. In the 401A plan, we took out the Victory Small Cap Value. We added in Goldman Sachs Small Company Insights. T. Rowe Price was replaced the same way here by Fidelity Blue Chip. And then Parnassus was removed by Fidelity Large Cap Stock. So quite a few changes. voted on in that particular meeting. So here's all those one by one. Now we do have red flags that continued. Janice Henderson Enterprise, we have to look at today. MFS Midcap Value, we have to look at today. JP Morgan US Equity was added to red flag. And we did take Franklin Small Cap Value off of red flag, but we might be putting it back on today. So that one's right on the borderline there. In the 401A, we removed the red flag status on global commodities. We were in good shape. Again, the victory came out in favor of the Goldman. Janus is in both plans and red flagged in both plans. Same with Victory, Sycamore, Established Value. And we've kind of covered those other changes already. So this numbers were from the April meeting, but as of March 18th of this year, the 457 plan balance was $49.5 million, held by just under 300 participants. Average account balance of $166,000. Questions from the minutes at all? All right, let's cover the markets. This is a bit aged, so forgive me, but it's through the end of May. So the way this year has worked, January was a good month. February was a little weak. March was pretty terrible with the start of war in Iran and the big jump in commodity prices and inflation. Then we had a furious rally that started towards the end of March. So your first quarter statement didn't look like much. Your second quarter statement looked a lot better. That's because you had a rally that went April into May. June was a bit mixed. And then July, which is not recorded on any statements yet, has not been a good period of time. These numbers are through the end of May. So at that point for the year, the S&P was up about 16%. I'm sorry, up about 11%. But 16% of that was from April and May. So if you get an idea, it was actually down from the first quarter. So part of that recovery was a 16% gain to put you up 11%. The NASDAQ up 25%, 16% of which was the year to date. So the NASDAQ had a double-digit loss at one point. And the Dow itself is up 6%, had to go up 10% in the quarter just to get back into the black. So if you look at the Russell benchmarks, the 1000s are the bigger stocks, the 2000s are the smaller stocks. So the Russell 1000 index, the year-to-date number up about 11, but it was up 15% in the quarter. Growth did better during the quarter, but value's done better during the year. To get an idea, kind of people ran into energy stocks when energy prices are going higher, and they got rid of technology stocks, and all that flipped the opposite way. So oil went to about $108 a barrel, and then plunged down into a level pretty close to $70 a barrel. As you probably know, it touched $100 a barrel again late last week and is now down again. So that tends to be what the market is basing itself on, is the inflation forecast. We do expect inflation to be about 3.5% for July. As you may know, the Fed's target is only 2% inflation. So we still have inflation that's above those numbers. There's still a lot of investors hoping for a Fed interest rate cut, but the futures market's currently predicting one rate hike before the end of this year and one in the first quarter of next year. But the Fed under a new chairman is very data dependent, as they say, and we'll see how these numbers change. So we had a slight deceleration in inflation from 4% to high threes from May to June. We expect to decel a little bit from June to July, but this is still a number that's 3.5%, which is too high. So when you have inflation going up, that tends to impact all assets. Higher inflation typically means higher interest rates. Higher interest rates impacts investments differently, but often you see growth investments struggle more under higher interest rates, and value tends to come out and do better. So if you look through that list, you get down to mid-caps. Mid-caps up about 11% for the year, 10% for the quarter. And if you compare the growth and value, the quarter-to-date numbers weren't that different, but the year-to-date difference is significant. Russell 2000, so that small stocks have had a good year this year. It's been a while since they outperformed large stocks, but that's the Russell 2000 benchmark, so about 17% for the quarter, 18% for the year. And then growth and value, it's a pretty even race year-to-date, but during the quarter, so you can see value did better in the first quarter, growth did better in the second quarter. The last two benchmarks for stocks, there are overseas benchmarks. So international stocks up about 10%, almost 11% for the quarter, year to date, just under 10. International markets had a great 2025. But since the war started, energy prices have gone higher. Places like Europe and Asia have had a bigger impact by that because they import more of their oil from the Middle East. So a lot of Europe stopped buying from Russia and then lost their oil supplies from the Middle East as well due to the blockades in the Strait of Hormuz. Emerging markets haven't really looked back. They've had a good year. So this is going to be China, India, Turkey, et cetera, up about 25%. And then as I switch sections there, fixed income market, not much coming from the bond markets because when interest rates are going higher, that's going to push bond prices lower. So in the first 5 months of the year, you've made less than 1% on the U.S. aggregate bond index. If you're in a money market fund, you did make 1.5%. You're still getting about a 3.5% rate of return on money market funds. Those will react immediately to any changes the Fed makes in terms of interest rates. As I work my way down there, you see the rates are probably pretty consistent. The one area that is on the weaker side or on the negative side is global bonds. So that's going to be U.S. and overseas where it's not hedged to the U.S. dollar. If it was hedged, you can see there's a 2% gain. But when you see money flowing into the U.S., that's a stronger dollar is going to make for weaker earnings for U.S. corporations. Commodities. So you can see for the quarter, we're pretty flat, the Bloomberg Commodity Index. But year-to-date up significantly, up about 25%. So natural gas hasn't done much this year, but it's certainly been traditional oil and oil byproducts that have been up a lot, as you've seen a cutoff on supply. Questions for me on any of those numbers? So let's look at the S&P numbers here on page 11 on the right-hand side. So there's different sectors of the S&P. There's 11 different sectors. So in the color orange there, we're looking at just the month of May. And in the color purple, we're looking at for all the first 5 months of the year, so the year-to-date numbers. So information technology had the great performance, but most of it coming in the period of time that's most recent. Oil has the great year-to-date numbers, but actually lost money in the month of May. So you can kind of track that what oil price is doing, what oil stocks doing, they're going to tie out pretty well. So you did see in the month of May, utilities struggle a little bit. Consumer staples is kind of where money goes when it's not sure about the risk. So if it pulls out of tech, it might buy a consumer staple to keep the money a little safer. But when you feel good about taking risk, in April and May turned into another big AI rally. People chased AI names, fell in love with it, especially companies that don't tend to have profits yet, but have a lot of potential. So they tend to sell off their safer stocks. That's why you see utilities, consumer staples struggle a little bit. But for the year, most categories doing well. Healthcare and financials have been the worst two, kind of standing out among the other 11, the other nine, total of 11, with some poor performance here today. Financials have done better since this report was printed. Healthcare is still struggling kind of with the healthcare cliff. A lot of people losing insurance or losing their Medicare benefits. You are seeing kind of a reduction in consumption. I can't remember the statistic, but I think the person that has health insurance consumes something like 5 times more healthcare than the person who doesn't have health insurance. So with more people uninsured, you are seeing a reduction in healthcare consumption. Any questions on the markets or anything like that before we proceed? So Fidelity provides a fee disclosure to the district. Part of our duties as a fiduciary is to be aware of all the expenses in the plan. So the way it works with your funds is we utilize the share class of the fund that either with the expense ratio or with a refund of any revenue sharing is the cheapest available on the market of that fund. That's kind of been our policy for the last 3 or 4 years. So as you look at this, they are ranked top to bottom, the highest balance down to the lowest balance. The first run here is the two plans combined. So if it was one big plan, so if you're wondering about some of the numbers, that's where they come from. So the Vanguard Money Market Fund, which you might remember we added just a few years ago, is the biggest holding overall. Then the Vanguard S&P 500, no surprise, the biggest stock holding there with over 32 million. A lot of folks have done well with the gold area. So you see that's 13.6 million of the plan. Bonds are about 10 million. People have sought out better yields and moved into the bond funds at our advice recently. Putnam Large Cap Value, T. Rowe Price, which we replaced, are both pretty close to 10 million. Then our second bond fund, the bond index, has about 9 million. If you read this left to right, it's the name of the fund, the assets as of the end of the first quarter, The ticker symbols they trade under, the expense ratios are based on the ticker symbols. They're not individually negotiated by the district. They are set by the fund. So we get to pick the share class. So you have the category based on Morningstar, the total investment option fee. So that's the expense ratio of the fund. So you can multiply the balance in assets times that expense ratio and get the number there at the end of the blue section. That's how many dollars participants are paying to those particular fund managers. If the fund refunds revenue sharing, you'll see a line item here in the green section, either an investment option fees, additional value, or administrative revenue allowance. So you might remember the district's policy now is if anybody owns those funds, we're refunding that revenue sharing back to their account each quarter. So their net costs, we'll show you on the next page. But why are we using revenue sharing funds? Well, there's a few funds that don't have a zero revenue sharing option, or there are funds that after the revenue share are cheaper than the zero revenue share option. So as you go down there, it's kind of scattered in terms of which funds do and don't. Index funds don't have revenue sharing, so there's no refund. A lot of our funds are the lowest cost zero revenue share version, which won't appear with any revenue sharing, but some of them do. So that page 24 kind of goes and continues into page 25. So if you want to see the totals, if you combine the two plans at the end of the first quarter, $257 million in those two plans, 36 basis points in terms of the net dollar cost. So we're really competitive with those particular numbers. There's about $900,000 that's going to the fund managers. But of that $900,000, $165,000 is being refunded to the participants that own revenue share funds. So Fidelity's fee is 2.75 basis points, if you can just see that here as I'm trying to highlight. So on the $257 million, they're charging $71,000 per year. That's a blended cost of $109 per head. Jason and Kevin will probably remember when we debated between per head fees and percentage fees. So now you can see it illustrated. Fidelity does make some money on transactions. So on the left-hand side here in gray, these are activities that an employee took on voluntarily regarding their account and paid Fidelity a fee for that. So about $2,900 in that. So whether it was an in-service withdrawal, a loan, requirement of distribution, et cetera, those are processing fees that Fidelity collects as part of their revenue. So if you look back up in the blue section, so 36 basis points, dollar weighted cost was dollar weighted, where we're implying the expense ratio of that particular funds by the balance as a percentage of the total. So if you look at the refunded amount, it actually gets it down to 33 basis points overall, about a third of a percent. So that is the combined plans. If you're curious, just to look at the money purchase 401A. So investment lineups are not identical, but there are some that cross over. So here, the money market fund is still the biggest, Vanguard S&P is still the second, the gold fund is still the third. So you'll see a little bit more of a scattering in terms of which funds have revenue sharing, but all of the dollar totals are going to be pretty similar. And then if you look at the processing fees, there are more processing fees on the 401A than there are on the 457. So the per head fee is bigger on the 401A because the plan balances are about five times larger on the 401A. So then if you look at the 457, it benefits from being partnered with the 401A. So being around $50 million, that per head fee is only $45. For most people, their bigger balance is the 401A, and that's the mandatory portion. The 457 is the voluntary savings benefit. Happy to go through any of these specific numbers on those pages, but it is covering similar stuff we saw as the fund, the plans in aggregate. All right, so it's July. It's time for the money purchase review. So we'll start here with how the assets are allocated. So the 401A plan is the bigger plan. We've got a lot of red here on the sheet because we know from the minutes there's a lot of red flags. So if you're remembering which ones are red flag, they are here. Now, when this was built, some of the fund changes we agreed to in August, I'm sorry, in April had not occurred. So you'll see in gray there which funds are being replaced. So T. Rowe Price All Cap Opportunity on the top right has 3.77% of the plan. That money is moving into affiliate blue chip, so that red flag will go away. The left of that, Parnassus, is going to affiliate large cap stock, so that red flag will go away. JP Morgan Equity Income in the upper left and large value is still red flag, so we can deal with that today. Victory Sycamore Established Value is still a red flag. Then we have two fund choices in mid-blend, an active Carillon and a passive index fund. To the right of that is large, I'm sorry, mid-growth, where we have Growth Strategies and Janus Henderson Enterprise, one kind of high-risk fidelity fund and medium to low-risk Janus fund. Across the bottom are small stocks. So on the far right, we have Neuberger Berman as an active growth manager doing well. Two funds in blend, an index and an active. And then Victory Sycamore was voted to be removed. That money moves into Goldman Sachs Small Company Insights. Across the bottom, we have our specialty funds, international funds, and our lifestyle funds. No red flags there. There were some changes. MFS International Intrinsic Equity was a change. Valley Global Commodity Stock went on red flag and came off. The rest of them were in good stead. This continues on another page, which is the safe holdings. So that Vanguard Money Market Fund represents 21% of the total assets. The two bond funds represent about 9% of total assets. And then everybody, I'm sure, remembers we added a stable value fund to the plan with some great effort to get that applied. There's not a lot of money in there yet. If you're wondering why, it's because the Vanguard Money Market Fund is paying slightly more. Also more liquid as we see interest rates start to go down on the short end. If that were to occur, then you would see the money market drop in rate faster, the stable value drop in rate slower, so money would start to graduate its way over there. Consumers can always determine what the best interest rates are, and they will utilize that when the time comes. Rates go higher, you're better off in a money market. All right, so this is asset diversification. We rank the investments, starting with number one is the highest risk investments, all the way down to the end of page two of this section, page 38 overall, which is your safe harbor choices, 38 and 39. And then as we work kind of left to right on these charts, we're reminding you of the Morningstar style, like Fidelity did on their disclosure, the name of the fund, the symbols, and then the assets that are listed here in each particular fund. If you see a zero, it's one of the funds that's being added that hasn't seen the flow into it when this was prepared. To the right of that is going to be you in bold, how many participants, current or former employees of the district, have money in each one of those funds. And then to make it easy to understand, the expense ratios of the funds are listed there in that fund section. So that's set by prospectus and same for every investor in that share class here or in other districts or other employers. And then the revenue sharing refund, that again, goes back to participant that actually holds the fund credited to their account once a quarter. And then the net expense ratio is the numbers we pay attention to. So that lines up closest to the category average as we review all of these funds. So we tried to put a box around the ones that are changing. So it kind of makes sense. Old fund is being closed. New fund is receiving those funds. And then the other red flag funds are ones we have to cover today. But three changes here that happened. And it looks like three red flags we still need to deal with. So happy to say the 401A is at $225 million. It was $40 million when I started working with the district. $1.1 million in loans outstanding, 355 participants, including former employees holding balances in the plan. Any questions for me, for anybody? But here's our decision sheet. So people don't mind helping me out today and keeping track of all of our changes. We can keep that as our scorecard as we go through. So we have items for attention, items for consent, and we'll start certainly with those items for review. Before I proceed, any other questions on anything? All right, so precious metals. So not a red flag fund, but we did want to point out that the performance of late has been a little bit below benchmark. Now, if you look at this one calendar year, it very much jumps off the page. So 2022 was not great. Small gain in 23, small gain in 24, and then a rocket ship in 25. So there are some participants that were up more than 130% in this fund last year. The benchmark, however, was up more. If you look at so far in the first 4 months of 2026, it's back to being a quiet performer, but they have tied the benchmark. Now, if you follow this category, you don't think they're quiet at all because January they went through the roof and then unfortunately peaked the last day of January and have been struggling ever since. If you just woke up at the end of April, you thought it was a pretty quiet year, but it's been kind of crazy. So the reason we're bringing this to your attention, it's the third largest holding, but we can see on this chart, it's about 4% below the benchmark on average the last 3 years. And about 2 percentage points over the last 5 years. Manager has been there only 1.3 years, so it's a newer manager, 4 stars out of 5 from Morningstar, and then they get a neutral for their process. Their numbers over the last decade have been top 12%, but their numbers in the last year have been bottom 10%. So I'm showing you a 3 and 5 year chart. I'm going to roll forward and show you a 6 and 12 month chart so you can get more recent performance. Again, on an absolute return basis, nobody's sad to make 24% or 75% over the last year. But our job is to look at relative performance, and Invesco's fallen below that particular benchmark. A lot of folks that use this fund love it. So I think we always have to be cognizant of that. I certainly think we need the category to stay in the plan. The question is looking at alternatives, and this is not a big area of the financial markets, so there are not a lot of choices to choose from. We have screened 3 that pass our screening process. So you'll see those on page 45. As a reminder, in the top chart, it's giving you the expense ratio and then the tenure of each manager team. The 3 funds with the green symbols are the new options you could consider. We also remind you in the second chart here how much of that revenue sharing is paid back to participants for the fund. But I'd say it would be a bit jarring for Van Eck, which charges 131. It does refund 50 basis points of that. But from a sticker price perspective, that's a big jump from 0.8. Now, you do have other choices that are similar in price, Allspring and First Eagle Gold. On the top chart there, you'll notice in blue, there's 97 participants in here. So it's become a very popular area, and it's 6.7% of the overall money purchase plan. So I personally think it's too soon to take any action for fund changes, but I think what we'll put in front of the committee as the first investment decision today is, do we feel the need to red flag or gray flag the Invesco Gold Fund?
I think this world of gold is a bit all over the place right now. So I would think a gray flag would probably be advisable. Also, to be honest, I've never really heard of Allspring, First Eagle, Van Eck.
It's a good
I've heard of that Invesco before. I've seen, I think I might have personal investments with some of their stuff. So I think it's something to keep an eye on, but this is an interesting world, gold. So I would think that at least a gray, I would yield to a red if somebody would have interest in that. But seeing that we have a lot of folks invested in it, want to make sure we give them a fair shake. But nobody's leaving. Are they out of the fund? Are you seeing movement out based on
Well,
staying in
that's
Invesco?
an interesting question because in my educational webinars, we've been strongly urging people to take profits. Anytime you have something that just goes through the roof like that, there's going to be a lot of leverage, which means borrowed money goes into that to push prices higher. There's going to be a lot of people allocating out of other diversified investments to chase what's hot. And when that eventually reaches its peak, it tends to have a pretty quick downturn. We have had a number of conversations with folks that have done really well with these funds that have successfully taken profits, but we also had some folks that are true believers that have not taken any profits. But generally, if you look at the numbers to answer your direct question, there's a little bit of money that's left it, but based on the pace of the growth of it, that's been kind of absorbed by the growth of the value.
Scott, this is maybe an interesting one. I might date myself a little bit on the committee, but I think years ago we had sought out a gold fund that was maybe more stable in this world by having more physical bullion. Maybe I'm wrong about that with Invesco, but if that is true, how does that sort of approach stack up against the other alternatives that we have on the table?
Yeah, so you're taxing my older memory too, but I believe that the one that was heavier in gold bullion were in the 457 plan,
okay.
I think was Franklin. Let's just look here to make sure I'm not wrong. Vesco is top 15 is all individual stocks that are gold miners. But I know First Eagle Gold does love to own some bullion. So to answer your question on page 50, they do have 21% of it actually in gold bullion.
And if you look at all the other ones, they don't even list that. They're all mining or gold companies.
Yep. Yeah. Not quite relevant for this particular decision, but just an interesting, I guess, piece of data we've used in the past to help.
Yeah, so everyone traces these performance based on the price of gold, but the earnings don't necessarily track that exactly. And for a while, I'd say in 2021, 2022, I would study these stocks and say they're very undervalued. There's pretty good dividends. There's good cash flow. Nobody's giving them any attention. And now probably the opposite is true, is that we're giving them more attention because profits have increased, but not to the value of the stock price increase. So that's just Wall Street for you. We hate it. We love it. It's all a cycle. So when that extremes happen, you know, you want to buy the bottom and sell the top, but nobody knows for sure what days those things will happen. So I think that it's probably premature to look at alternatives. I would agree with Director Wagan, but the debate between red and gray flag, I think, is still to be made.
Are these falling below both the benchmark and the capital markets line for both the 3 and 5 year periods? Sort of our customary trigger for some kind of intervention, correct?
I agree. Yep. Also, the case on the 6 and 12 month chart for what was stated. But First Eagle and Van Eck are definitely smaller, more focused on certain industry shops. Allspring is a bigger shop, but it is a spinoff from a major bank that renamed its investment division Allspring.
I still don't see. So fourth quarter 25, Invesco did 13%, the other one 17%. 16, 19. But yeah, you're a little low. And then for first quarter this year, Invesco did close to 7. The others did 9, 9, 9.5. I don't see it like that, like poor performing. Like it's under those, but it's not so significant that it warrants.
Yeah, I think it's premature.
Everything you're giving is more you start neutral, except for Allspring is bronze. Everything else, all the other options are neutral. So,
yeah. Kevin, to your point, look at the First Eagle on the upside down stay capture because of the bullion. You just don't get the volatility when you have the gold at 7%. Mm-hmm. Right? So what will be interesting when we look at this in the next quarter is just it's not been a good summer for gold is who's playing defense better. This chart would argue that First Eagle is playing defense the best and our current fund's playing defense the worst, but I think that's going to be our decision process in our next meeting.
Yeah, okay with the suggestion to gray flag it between now and then we certainly will definitely want to revisit it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, considering there's so many people in the world here, this at least keep an eye on it.
All right, gray flag, they'll put it at the top of the list for the next.
And people run to gold when there's volatility, and there's a ton of that right now.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, everybody. The first major decision there for investments today. Emerging markets, never had any problems with this fund before. American Funds New World, same manager team for 27 years. It's highly rated, 4 stars in gold. It's in the top 20% for all emerging market funds over the last decade. Again, the manager's been there 27 years. They had a great 2023, great 2024. They made you a lot of money in 25, but not as much money as the benchmark. That's your bottom left chart here. And then not a great start to 2026. So if you look at their holdings, we always would marvel at the, even though it's an emerging markets fund, that they would have a huge position in Microsoft, and that was great when Microsoft was ruling the day, but Microsoft's had a very difficult 10 months or so. Software stocks in general have struggled. So this is an emerging markets fund. Taiwan Semiconductor certainly can be argued as an emerging market company, the first three probably, but Broadcom, NVIDIA, Microsoft, those are some of the biggest companies in the world, so wouldn't really call them emerging. So their strategy has usually been to be more consistent than to have the big ups and downs. But emerging markets, as I pointed out earlier, have had a great start to this year and last. And just our fund being a little bit more moderate to conservative in terms of risk on the 2025 and 2026 numbers, it just hasn't kept up with the benchmark. So I'm hardly ready to throw it out with the rubbish, but I do think that it is something that we need to make note of. I think a gray flag at minimum, the red flag. So the qualitative measures are still good, but the quantitative numbers, they're in the bottom 20% the last year. So for an actively managed fund, they do have a good expense ratio at 57 basis points. You can do a little bit better with a DFA, which is a semi-index fund, and then the other four are all active managers that charge a fair bit more. Only Goldman refunds 12 of their 103 basis points. So for many years, this was the top performing emerging markets fund, and they were 5 stars in gold, still 4 stars in gold now, but a bit more of a struggle in the last 18 months.
Yeah, but how emerging markets are you with Broadcom? Microsoft.
No doubt.
Is your
top. They've emerged.
Or the big seven. Whereas if you look at some of these others here, they're definitely emerging market funds or companies.
Also a massively sized fund at 90 billion. Many of these are less than 5 billion.
And for 26, this is a negative 1.47, whereas some are at 3, some are at 6. PIMCO's at 8 return.
Yeah. So I'd be supportive of red flagging with its recent performance.
Concerning. Yeah, and if you truly want to stay in that emerging category, that's what the intent is, then this doesn't seem like that's the...
Yes.
It's a defense, which is good, but doesn't give you 100% truly emerging. I would support.
Big asset base helps keep the expenses down, but then it means they have to hold on to bigger stocks to be liquid, and so that's why you're seeing the 6 and 12-month numbers look like that. All right. Anybody opposed to the red flagging of American Funds in the World? This is in the other plan too, so we'll be able to make the same decision there in a minute. All right. So we will page past the alternatives. Like every meeting, we're talking about American Funds' new perspective. We have debated whether this one should have a different benchmark. We did not change the benchmark. So overall rating is still very good. 4 stars in gold. Manager tenure is 25 years. Over the last year, they beat 68% of their peers, 66 in the last 3 years, 72% of them in the last 5 years, and 76% in the last decade. So it's a bit more of a growth fund than a blend fund. Our benchmark is a blend benchmark, the MSCI World Index, that's Morgan Stanley Capital Investments World. That is a fund or an index that is very U.S. oriented because the biggest companies in the world are U.S. based. And back to the discussion about companies like Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, et cetera. So if you look at it, I guess the two Morningstar sub-benchmarks, the yellow diamond, which is blend, the orange one, which is growth, it looks fine. But if you look at it against the world index on the three-year chart, it is a bit below. But keep in mind that three-year chart is a 34th percentile performance, so they're still in the top third. And then on the five-year chart, it looks like a mess, but that's actually a 28th percentile performance. So there aren't too many funds that are keeping up with the benchmark in this area. You really need to be heavily concentrated in those stocks I described, by the way, all of which are doing fairly poorly this summer, with the exception of Apple. So they'll see what the next quarter brings in terms of that performance update. But still very strong at 4 stars in gold. This is a three-year chart and five-year chart. If I go to the 6 and 12-month chart, you're changing the scale a little bit. But it is about 4.5 percentage points down below the last 6 months versus benchmark and full 6 percentage points in the last 12 months. But let me remind you once again, that's a 32nd percentile performance. So most active managers are struggling here. Not a huge percentage of the plan, 1.38, but there are 49 people in. So we do have alternatives to consider, but I would say the committee's normal process still applies. We can either keep it as is, we can gray flag it or red flag it. I think it's probably too soon to look at alternatives.
That we gray flagged this back in January.
That's right. We were, okay. Thanks for the reminder on that.
And its performance overall and relative to its peers has not improved.
Yeah, that probably speaks to the red.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm going.
I'd hate to lose the fund, but I do think we have to execute.
This brings a thought to my mind, which looking at these other indices or other benchmarks, it actually looks quite good. And you mentioned these are in the 32nd, 34th, 28th percentile rankings.
Yeah.
Is this worthy of potentially revisiting the benchmarks alongside red flagging it, or are we kind of locked into that those benchmarks? That's too big of a lift for this committee.
I think it's at least worth the exercise to revisit the benchmark. I'm happy to be overruled on that. I don't think we'll change our mind, but it doesn't hurt for to have that in our due diligence files. But I would at least look at it one more time. What I don't want to do as a committee is to choose a fund that is heavily in the categories that we're working that may not work in the future, where we're essentially buying into the peak of these categories and writing them down without the benefit of writing them up in the prior 5 years. The American Fund's New Economy to me is a fund that speaks to that. So, I do think New Perspectives is a better fund for your participants over the long term, more appropriate in terms of its risk profile. So, Kevin, I would say it's probably worth revisiting, but I don't think our conclusion will change. I'll leave it to the rest to decide whether that's worthwhile to do in our next meeting.
So how about a recommendation where we red flag this fund, revisit it next quarter alongside a deeper dive into the benchmarks that are shown here.
Yeah, I can support that. That's a good idea.
Then 49 employees have this.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that works for me.
What's strange here is you can see the overall benchmark, the blend benchmark, the growth benchmark, and the fund are all kind of in the same spot. But I still would go through the exercise. Never hurts to have it in your files. So. All right. So benchmark review for October. Okay, thank you, everybody. That's a red flag officially now. All right, so two choices of mid-cap growth. No issue whatsoever with the Fidelity growth strategies. That's been wonderful. Has had a difficult 6 months, but had a lot of house money to work with, outperforming so heavily in the past. A bit more conservative red flag was Janus Henderson Enterprise. It's in orange to remind you this is in both plans. Fidelity has about 1.25% of the plan. Janus Henderson has 1%, but far more people. Janus is kind of, they work well together because Janus is better on defense. Fidelity is better on offense. And you can kind of see where they fall. But Janus has had trouble keeping up with the benchmark as we've had some good years since 2022. Its five-year chart looks better, but its three-year chart's not looking great, and sort of missed the party here recently, certainly for 2026. 2025, they were above the benchmark, but Fidelity beat them. Fidelity beat them in the prior year as well. So typically, Janus looks good on the five-year charts when you have a year like 2022 where they lost less. They haven't been horrible until this year, but they are not keeping up overall. When things aren't good, it's a fund I think we're glad to have, but can we keep it looking good enough to stay in the plan until the next downturn comes? So that's a 3 and 5 year chart. If I go to 6 and 12 month, it's like, uh-oh, they both are struggling here.
Scott, I know our information that goes through April. Have you looked at any more recent information for either of these?
I haven't, to be honest with you. I have not. But mid caps as a whole have not had a great 2020. There's two benchmarks. Might remember we've debated these benchmarks in the past, but there's the S&P Mid-Cap 400 growth. S&P, you have to be a profitable company to be in the benchmark. And then there's the Russell Mid-Cap Value, Mid-Cap Blend, and Mid-Cap Growth. The Mid-Cap from S&P is doing better recently because profitable is doing better, but that tends to change too. So, Russell tends to see more high flyer stocks in their benchmark.
Can you speak a little bit to the he's headed up a second ago. The chart in the bottom right on page 75, it looks like there's a lot of style drift going on.
It's a huge amount of style drift. Yeah, Kevin's got a good point if everybody can see that. So the way this chart reads is the circle is still Fidelity the whole time, but the smaller parts of the circle are where it was in the most distant past. The bigger part of the circle is most recent. So you can see that at times they were kind of hovering up here few years ago because it started in data in 2023. Then they kind of worked their way down to being a pure growth fund. And now because they've had so much success, a lot of their holdings are in the large growth category, even though it's a mid-growth fund. So again, huge sort of bracket buster stocks are kind of driving this market. And so to be a successful fund, they've had to load up on those. The better stocks of this year, Hilton Worldwide. We do have the option of replacing Janus, or I would say keeping it red flag would be the other option. We are at our first review, so it's early in the 12 months. These options in green are also choices. The T Rowe, which is listed in orange, is a reminder that's available in the 457 plan already. But in terms of risk reward, Janus kind of stands alone. The other ones are similar to Fidelity. So it would be a bit of a style change in addition to a manager change.
I think based on that, I'd be comfortable keeping our flag. It would give me a little more time. Otherwise, I think it was switching the nature of the offering.
Yep. We may have to, but I don't think we have to yet. So that's still a red flag then, everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. So item number four is a keep, and item number five is a keep red flag.
Did you like any of those to go over to? Maybe the Invesco?
Invesco's got the best recent numbers. You can see
the only one with the last 6 months in the positive.
Yeah, so this
is 5% positive too.
Yeah, so if you look at the short-term performance, Invesco's in the top 5% of all managers in this category. But our fund is not doing too badly if you're Fidelity, but Janus is struggling. Now, in mid-value, you have another fund that's on the okay category of rating. With red flag 2 quarters ago, Victory established value. This has been in the district plan as long as I can remember. But it is underperforming. Again, bottoms-up value manager do not work in this environment. Profitless tech companies are. So if you're a bottoms-up manager who likes cash flow, then your stocks nobody cares about. 115 people here, 1% of the plan. It has fallen below the benchmark by a good deal on the three-year chart and on the five-year chart. So we do have it flagged. I think the qualitative measures argue that it is still a good fund. But in this case, our opinion, our decision may be impacted by the alternatives to consider, which there are two that are quite good, one that's amazing. But it's still 3 stars in gold, so it's not shabby. I will note that the six-month number is actually on benchmark. So the committee would have some backing to say we give it more time. Now I'm looking at page 687 here. There are two funds that kind of boggle the mind, but Invesco Value Opportunities is the number one fund of the last 1, 3, 5, and 10 years. It also tends to do well when the market's up, tends to do well when the market's down. Doesn't take a day off. Now, note you are picking up a little bit more cost on the sticker price. So you're going to 77 basis points from 58. Victory refunds 10, Vesco refunds 25. So you'll be within 5 basis points of your current cost. And then if you look at short-term performance, it's Invesco. Now, no one would be sad that it had Fidelity, but it's tough to pick Fidelity when Invesco's on the chart. And then these numbers are just unbelievable. So 128% of the good and only 90% of the bad. So there is an active manager that can beat the market. Our fund, unfortunately, hasn't beat the benchmark since 2022. So when those numbers roll off, it's going to look worse, not better. So I think we got to make a change. I'll let you guys pick which fund you changed.
You already told
us. Go with Scott's recommendation.
All right. Well, item number six would be remove Victory, add Invesco Value Opportunities. Am I getting ahead of myself?
I don't think so.
Invesco short term treasury is like their short term treasury is like crushing it right now.
Well, that's just cash. So when the market's down, they don't go down. But they're using that. It does seem based on some of these stocks, and I've looked at a lot of these names. These aren't fly to the moon stocks, but they seem to buy them and sell them at the right time. What do you pay a manager to do? Look at their floating bar chart.
Yeah.
So hopefully we don't wreck their whole policy by giving them our money, but. All right.
Sounds fine.
So that's our first official change today. Switching in the money purchase to large value, we have two choices here. Love the Putnam Fund. It's just here for reference to know you have a second choice here. No issue with that fund whatsoever. That is your fourth largest holding overall. It's beating the benchmark with less risk. It's doing that consistently. It is a great fund. JP Morgan for many years has been the same. Manager did retire in late 2024. Even before she retired, it was a bit more of a struggle. They tend to be more dividend oriented and risk averse, which hasn't exactly been where the market is focused. It is still 3 stars in gold, but very middle of the pack in its performance. Both of them are taking less risk than the benchmark, so that should still be noted. So 3-year chart, 5-year chart, you could say JP Morgan's fine. It's on the capital markets line. This is our second review after a January red flag. 6-month chart looks good for both. 12-month chart's better for Putnam. Here are alternatives to consider in green. Hartford dividend and growth is already in the 457. If you do want to make a change, there are several funds that I like. I'd probably point at the Fidelity Equity Income because while it charges 52, it refunds 35 of that. That is cheap. But you could also make a pretty good case that JP Morgan's close enough to keep it another quarter. Let's look at upside downside capture as a tiebreaker. They all tend to be more risk adverse. Putnam is the best at 100 of the good and only 86 of the bad. JP Morgan, 90 of the up, 92 of the down. Fidelity would be this one here, about 88 of the up and 85 of the down. And the long-term performance, you'd want to be in Putnam. But second to that recently has been Invesco Comstock on the 5-year. You have a little bit more of a struggle here on the 1-year for some of these, but Putnam's winning the game. Another option is to just merge them into Putnam.
What's the total number of employees?
14. Putnam already has 150 there.
I would lean towards that. Virgin? Yeah. Assistant, right? Like
it's solid. Solid one we already own.
Playing a game, just a quick change. Yeah. Might as well go with the guy that's doing the best. Kind of like
them. Yeah. Okay.
And the thought process behind having two in the same category was just
because you could probably options, right?
Variety,
yeah, variety.
And JP Morgan was the more conservative one, but Putnam's giving you the upside without the downside.
We could always go back and do a assessment to say, hey, we need to do some more variety on some of these, but we have a lot of variety as is.
Yeah, you can see on the 6-month chart. Well, the two funds we have been two of the better ones, right? Okay, everybody okay with the one last choice? One last thing to follow? All right, that concludes the 401A plan. We have 3 keeps, 3 red flags, and 2 changes. All right, 457 red flags. Some of these are duplicates. Highly encourage the same decision.
Consistent.
So American Funds New World. This is 43 deferred comp participants, 1% of the plan. I am going to recommend we red flag that.
Given that we just did for the.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Going out on a limb. All right, thank you, everybody. Franklin, we took off a red flag in the last meeting. It's not a disaster, but wanted to point out its recent performance. So 4 stars in silver, so very strong there. Manager, 14 years, good. Its individual performance, 1 year, 42nd, 3 year, 39, 5, 47, 10 year, 23. So that manager, 10 year, they beat 80% of their peers roughly over the time they've been here. 5 year chart is just fine. 3 year chart's a little bit more questionable. Not a lot of money in here, but they've been pretty consistent. So 2025 is what's hurting them. They had a good 2024. We feel like this is enough to red flag. This feels to be a decision between gray flag and no action.
Scott, these charts are a little bit old, from like the April.
Yeah.
I just looked at these, this fund specifically.
To be honest, I have not. Yeah.
A little hesitant to make a decision.
Yeah, well, you make a good point.
On a short-term horizon.
Yeah. Some million stars are May, so they're a month newer. So good overall performance, but not versus the benchmark. The last 1 year, it's up 32%, and the benchmark fell more. Up 16% the first 5 months of this.
Is the line below that on the Morningstar? Is it the plus minus standard index? Is that showing it's
how much it made or lost more than the benchmark?
Okay, so in 26, it's been above.
Yeah. So if you go back a full 12 months, it's below, which is right. This number up here.
Okay.
But if you go in 2025, that's where they were struggling. 2026, they righted the ship. They had 3 years in a row where they underperformed the benchmark.
This currently is red flagged or is not?
We took it off red flag in the April meeting.
Okay. I wouldn't want to get part of this too much whiplash. It's not like it's categories. As you said earlier, the small stuff have been doing relatively well this year. So I'm fine letting that line. We'll see it on a normal course in a quarter.
Yeah.
We've seen some change.
Yeah.
I'm okay keeping this.
Okay. So no action taken in small value. It's fund number 10. The growth. I'm going to recommend we continue the red flag on Janice Henderson.
Most likely to loss.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
I'm also going to recommend we continue to keep the T Rowe price. It's the other option. Rolling, those of you watching online. All right. Maybe the toughest decision today. MFS is a mid-value fund that is also on red flag. Red flag one meeting ago. So it's 3 year performance. It's below benchmark with less risk. It's 5 years, almost a capital markets, about 0.5% below with less risk. It's recent performance. All of the problems are in 25 and 26. Up to 2024, we've never had a problem with this fund. 6 and 12 month performance is discouraging. Alternatives. There's Invesco again. Do we give MFS more time? Do we give investors a different fund like Fidelity for the other plan?
It
to the tough one.
I got a question. This is Tran.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, specifically with this fund, you said that there are two reporting cycles. It's under the water. In terms of performance, what seems to be the issue with this fund based on your analysis?
Yeah, we're seeing a phenomena in mid-value, small-value funds where what we call bottoms-up analysis, which is you look at the company's fundamentals first. You don't try to predict economic trends and then try to find the stocks that benefit from those trends, which is what we'd call top-down analysis. But bottoms-up analysis of cash flows, business, dividend growth, that kind of stuff, those have not been popular stocks. Some fund managers or investors would call those boring stocks. People have much more interest in companies that are involved in AI or anything to do with rapid growth. So a lot of money has chased into those particular categories. So if your manager is sticking to the fundamentals, it has not paid off. That's why MFS and Victory don't look good in this category.
All right. But you said that in 24, it was on par, right? I mean, it was up, yeah. It was performing.
Yeah, so that's this year here where it did do well on an absolute and a relative basis.
Okay.
It's just its way of doing things is out of style, but those things tend to come back in style. It's a question of whether it will come back in time.
Right. And how much funds do we have invested in?
It is 1.6% of the 457 plan. So that's okay. About $700,000.
Yeah. Okay.
118 employees.
Okay. Well, that's a hard one.
Better than Victory.
What's your recommendation? I mean, should we stick it out longer or should we cut bait on this one?
Yeah, I think you can go a lot of different ways. I'd probably keep it red flag myself.
I would agree with that. I mean, it's just two cycles so far, right? Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah, we're playing the long game here.
Thank you for the input.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, fund number 13, MFS Mid Cap Value R4 remains a red flag.
Then we'll come back at the next meeting and look at that.
Definitely. Last one for today is on page 154. So two choices in large blend. S&P 500 is always going to be right on top of the benchmark for better or for worse. So no issue there on fund 15. Fund 14 was red flagged in the prior meeting. That's JP Morgan US Equity. We've had that for quite a while. So actively managed large blend fund does represent about 2% of the plan. 42 participants are in there. So on the three-year chart, it's underperforming with a bit more risk. On the five-year chart, similar story. Now, if you look at versus the year-by-years, it's been pretty solid over the last few years. It did outperform in 23. It did not outperform in 24, although it had good overall performance. 25 was a bit of a gap in 26. So you keep seeing this theme where bottoms-up managers are struggling in 25 and 26. But guess what's working this summer? Bottoms-up managers. So there's hope. That could change tomorrow. So 6 and 12 month is not encouraging. Here are our alternatives. Most of them are kind of clustered around the S&P 500. Another category where it's hard to find funds beating the benchmark. As a quick reminder, in orange, fairly large cap stock was added to the 401A in the last meeting to replace Parnassus. So we have made a change in this category of late.
we went with them, we would just be adding in what the 7 month possible.
Yeah, so we do sometimes crossover, sometimes we like the variety. Fidelity is the best performer on these sheets on the 3 and 5 year and on the 6 and 12 month. Read them off. Our current fund is 4 and gold, normally very, very good. Vanguard's 4 and gold. American Funds is 5 and gold. DFA is 4 and gold. Fidelity Large Cap, 5 and bronze. So that's actually a little bit less. MFS is neutral and 4. So I'd probably skip that one. T Rowe is 5 and gold, the highest rating you can receive. So from a qualitative basis, I think the committee is in good standing to give it more time, but you may not want to.
We already have the index fund in this category, which is tracking the benchmark. And looking at the chart on page 158, we're paying a manager to manage our funds to get higher returns with less risk. The only two funds that meet that kind of definition, if I'm reading this correctly, is the Fidelity and the T. Rowe Price.
You are reading it correctly.
Well, if we're going to be paying someone to be managing our money, those would be the two. And it's hard to argue with the performance that we've seen out of Fidelity. It seems like year over year, there's going to be on top. I would be inclined to make that move, even though I know we don't always have the same funds in both plans, but winners are winners.
Oh, good points.
The holdings of all these, though, are these massive companies.
It's all the same stocks.
Yeah.
It's literally like
it's just when you buy them and sell them.
Here and you put one here. And
oh, absolutely.
So these are all the big movers right now.
I mean, looking at this chart, I mean, which one would you drop?
The one you have. Excellent point. I mean, so it's third quartile on the 1 year, third on the 2 year.
Why don't you give the worst choice?
It's third on the 3 year, it's third on the 4 year.
We wanted to mirror what we do in the 401, we go with Fidelity. If we want to provide, you know, options for the investor, then the T Rowe would kind of be that.
Yeah.
I don't think any of these are going to go too horribly wrong, in my opinion, because they are all investing. Exactly. It's just a different way of.
Pricing wise, are about the same. You got the revenue share issue with Fidelity, you don't have a T Rowe.
T Rowe is 0.45.
Refunding 15, so that's pretty cheap. Play refunds more, but charges more.
But I'm happy to wait it out 6 months if ever people are concerned. But as was said, it's underperforming consistently.
I think I'd like to make a move. It's just a question of go with the same or go with a second alternative option. And I'm supportive of either. I think those managers are worth the additional cost.
You said she rose a bit cheaper, though, basis points.
Yes, sir. It's also the highest rating. All right.
Let's go with that.
A little bit of variety. So fund number 14, JP Morgan, U.S. Equities out. It's replaced by T. Rowe Price, U.S. Equity Research.
We merged one and we varietized another. That's been a word.
Varietized?
Yeah. Good at making up things. We're on the fly.
Put that in the minutes. All right. So that concludes my presentation. You want to read off the changes?
Sure.
Brave enough?
Yeah. Okay. For the 401A items that we reviewed, item one is a gray flag, which is the Invesco Gold and Special Minerals. We're going to keep red flag for item two, American Funds New World. Item three, the same American Funds New Perspective, keep red flag with a benchmark review for October. Item four, Fidelity Growth Strategies, we're keeping. Item five, Janice Henderson is a red flag, keeping a red flag. Item six, the Victory Sycamore established value is removing and replacing with the Invesco value opportunity. Putnam, item seven, we're keeping, and number eight, the JP Morgan is getting merged into the Putnam. Is that all correct?
Yep,
okay, and then for the 457, item number nine, American Fund, we are red flagging. 10, Franklin Small Cap is no action taken. Janice Henderson Enterprise, item 11, is a red flag. T. Roy Price is, we're keeping. The MFS Mid Cap is a red flag. The JP Morgan, we are replacing with the T. Roy Price. And the Vanguard is a keep.
Excellent.
Thank you.
I'll make a motion to make the changes as read by the board secretary.
Great.
I'll second that.
Perfect. All for the book.
Roll call, Director Wiegand?
Yes.
Director, Director Jung?
Jung's an aye.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Jason Dadakis?
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Okay, great. I'll move these items to be on the consent calendar unless one of them, the one with Scott, needs to be on the regular calendar. Or can that be?
I can make the consent.
Okay, perfect. All right, then I'll make that. And are there any announcements or reports by anyone? Seeing no hands raised, we will adjourn. Thank you all for your patience.
You all.
Thank you.